Adyak.
You're listening to Adyak. Adyak is the official podcast of the AAF Greater Lehigh Valley Ad Club. Our mission is to inspire creativity and enhance the professional development of the advertising and marketing communities where we live and work. I'm your host, Bill Childs, and I'll talk with artists, designers, writers, directors, photographers, along with those who work in a creative capacity. Our aim here is to serve as a creative resource to help you stay informed, entertained, and above all, inspired. But first, I want to thank ASR Media. We appreciate your support and collaboration.
Welcome back, Ad Yakkers, to Episode 2, Season 6. Today's guest is more than an artist. He's a living manifesto for perseverance and creative transformation. Theron Cook is an award-winning muralist and brand strategist with over 17 years of experience bringing art into public spaces, businesses, and communities. He founded Don't Quit Omniversity and the TCA Don't Quit Foundation, driven by a mission to serve, inspire, educate, and empower both creative students and business owners. His work isn't just about aesthetics, it's about resilience, story, and bringing people together through visual communication. In this episode, we talk about the elusive state of flow, that moment when creativity, time, and purpose align. We explore what it means to use design not just as a tool, but as a way to heal, uplift, and connect. And yes, we dig into the belief that art is everything, a philosophy Theron lives through every mural, workshop, and foundation effort. This conversation was a profound one for me, as Theron shares some incredible stories about his life, his family, and his work in the community. So settle in. Today's episode is about art, resilience, transformation, and the power to never quit, even when life tries to hold you down. Here is my Adyak with Theron Cook. You know, I'm worried about how much we have to talk about. Like, we're going to get through it in an hour. I'm serious. Like, there is so much. You know, I like to think of myself as someone who's busy. You got me beat by a mile. So I want to start at a place where I want to see what your take is on this. Deciding to live a creative life, that is not easy. I don't think it's rewarding as because it's in us, but you know, a lot of bumps, a lot of challenges, a lot of setbacks, a lot of rejection. What's your take on living a creative life, choosing to live a creative life?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And you're right, it's not easy. It's pretty much going against the grain. It's one of the hardest pursuits, in my opinion. But just like you said, it is rewarding. You have to have conviction. You have to know who you are. Mm-hmm. You have to have, you know, a purpose, you know. And I'm speaking for, you know, myself and my journey pursuing the creative route, you know, because there are a lot of ebbs and flows, just like, you know, life in general. But yeah, that's what I would say.
So fair to say creativity chose you, right? Like it was just something that was, it just was in there. You knew that you were going to, the creativity was going to be a part of your life. Art was going to be a part of your life. Fair to say?
Yes. Yes. There was a point in my life where I discovered that it was going to be the rest of my life. That's what I was going to pursue. But leading up into that point, it was more or less, I was shying it away. I was sweeping it under the rug. And that was because I didn't know who I was, you know?
Okay. Why do you say you were sweeping it under the rug? What made you want to sweep it under the rug, first of all?
Yeah, that's a great question. Society suppressing it. It's not really that cool. You know, as I was growing up, mm-hmm. you suppress it. You want to fit in. You want to do what's normal and do what's accepted in society. So I was suppressing it. I was putting it to the side, even though I had that nag, as most children and kids do. But as I ventured off into sports, I found a way to have a discipline and work work ethic in sports that kind of gave me that outlet, kind of mirroring the creative outlet that I actually eventually went back to.
Sure. Was there a mentor in there? Was there a teacher in there? Was somebody that kind of like nurtured that in you, or kind of like saw something in you, or was it, how did that develop?
Yeah, it actually, my first real issue was about in fifth grade. I had this issue with my foot. You know, I was a pretty fast runner. Uh-huh. I was one of the fastest kids in my class. We would do these relay runs just to see if we were eligible to be in, you know, the competition. And the fifth grade, I just had this issue with my foot. I couldn't pinpoint the issue. I went to a lot of different doctors. So I had to deal with that pain as a young kid and push forward. So it started right there where I didn't want to let everybody know that I had this pain, and I didn't want people to feel sorry for me.
Okay.
And so right then and there, but I pushed forward. I played basketball. I played for different leagues, the Olivets, my middle school. But that developed this this determination in me. But as far as to answer your question more directly, I was pursuing basketball, and then I couldn't pursue it because of that issue caught up to me.
Okay.
And I just couldn't push forward. And that led me into searching for a creative outlet for self-expression.
Mm. Okay. All right. Now, you also teach, correct? You teach art?
Yes, I teach intro to acrylic painting at the Goggle Works.
Okay. Yeah. All right, so we share that in common. I teach advertising design at LCTI after a 40-year career, so I'm new to teaching. Talk to me about what you're seeing in the classroom. Like, how do you work with kids that maybe don't feel as confident as they might be, or as that you know that they could be? You know, how do you get them to believe in themselves? What are some things that you do? Because I'm curious about that as well. You know, because I see that a lot in my classroom. I see just this utter lack of confidence, you know, because it's hard, you know, you're going into uncharted territory when you're working with art and being around other kids that are maybe perception is that they're a little bit better than you, you know, how do you work around that? How do you work through that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I see it often, and I just reflect back to where I was and how I felt. And it's a lack of confidence, self-awareness, insecurity. So I approach it from that standpoint. And I love, like, I tell people that I teach life through art. So I'm engulfed in art so much that I'm able to teach it to younger kids, mm-hmm. but also teach it to older adults that are deprived from creative outlets and just, you could call it hobbyism or just mm-hmm. being expressive, you know?
Yeah.
So I meet them where they're at, and, you know, just building upon understanding, shedding light on who they are, you know, their purpose and things of that nature. So I like to take color psychology mm-hmm. and, you know, the basic principles of art, and break it down into practical life lessons. I really go in, and when I see somebody down and about in my class, just insecure, they want permission. They crave permission, and that goes for adults and children.
Yep.
You know, for some reason we want to have that permission to be creative and expressive and just be outside of the box. You know,
mm-hmm.
so I like to create safe spaces and safe havens to nurture that feeling of, you know, being having permission and being able to really express yourself.
Yeah, I like something you said there, and I agree 100%. I think I think art is one of those things that there are lessons in art that are you can apply to the rest of your life. You know, even if you're not going to go in to be an artist. I mean, think about all the things, you know, coming out of your comfort zone, being willing to take a risk, having the courage to try something new. Those are all things that like every industry needs. You know, we all need that. And I love that, like, that's what you're talking about that you're doing in your class, because that's something that will last forever. Whether they go into art, whether they pursue art or not, you know, I see teachers and like what you and I do is kind of like guides. We're like a guide that they're meeting on their journey. And if we do right by them and teach them those skills that maybe they're not getting in social studies or math, you know, you're not really maybe going to math class and taking a chance or but you can do that with art. That's really cool. And then what you see is they go out that, and those skills are transferable. So I love that. I absolutely love that. That's cool.
Yeah. Perfectly said. And, you know, I had a lot of art teachers, you know, especially in high school when I decided to take that route. One teacher in particular, it was our first day of class. He told, and I use this technique to this day. I just used it for my last workshop, art therapy workshop, and it works. And I use it every time a lot. But he told us to close our eyes and scribble on a piece of paper and then open our eyes. And we had to make out images that we saw within our scribble.
Mm.
And that technique, I use it to this day. And it's so profound because you're already dealing with chaos, but it's a subconscious chaos. And it's something that you did and you created subconsciously. And now you're taking that chaos and you're just bringing order to it by what you make out in within the chaos, you know. And then I start from that point on, you know, just identify small, medium, large shapes out of your scribble, you know. And then I introduce color to them, you know, and sure, things of that nature. But that's how I approach, you know, my classes.
Mm. Also, another one is, you know, what I do in my class is I teach the kids that, you know, there is no such thing as failure. There might be an unintended outcome, but it's not a failure. You know, you have to just, if you're willing to try, embrace the process, go into that process with all of everything that you can bring to it, and we'll look at it at the end. But that's the area that I want them to focus on, is that process of creating.
Yes.
It's not necessarily the end result, but I'll tell you what, some of this stuff I see in my room will blow your mind. And I'm sure in yours as well, right?
Yeah.
I just, you know, the thing that always bothered me and will always bother me is, how did creativity, and this, I don't expect an answer for this because this is like, you know, I don't know what the answer would be. Why is creativity seen as frivolous? How did it get to be seen as like, oh, you're coloring, how nice. You know, who was the PR person for creativity who totally dropped the ball? Because creativity is everything. It's it's, I feel like we are missing a huge component in our educational system, in our corporations, and it all comes back to creativity. All of it. You know, and kids understand it. Kids get it. They know it, right? But what we see, or what I see, I think sometimes, is when they get into middle school, you know, they start to kind of be self-aware and maybe don't want to be that kind of kid that's like seen as like, you know, the outsider, the one that's like comfortable in their skin and kind of like wears the shirts they want to wear and whatever, their personality. They let their personality out. And I see that's where the creativity starts to kind of shrink, is in middle school, right? And if you're lucky, by college, maybe you're ready to let it out again. But I don't know, man. I don't know, and I will never know why and how creativity came to be seen as just this frivolous activity when it's literally everything. It's life, right? And I know you know that.
Yes. And my philosophy is art is everything and everything is art. And I'm an advocate for like self-expression. And, you know, just the piggyback off what you're saying, they only realize how important art is when things happen tragically in your life. Even myself, I say art saved my life. And it took a certain pain point in my life to really make me focus on art, you know?
Yeah.
But like, for instance, like, I do a lot of, you know, I do some commission work, and a lot of people appreciate art when they lose a loved one, when they don't have access to what they usually have, and all they have to that remains in this physical world is the art that represents what they used to love or what they used to experience, if that makes sense.
Oh, total sense. Yep.
You know, so it's more of substance, you know, like, you know, mm-hmm. It becomes that when emotions are involved, when you can't explain the
unexplainable. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now you have a foundation, right? It's called, is it Don't Quit?
It's a TCA Don't Quit Foundation. TCA stands for Theron Cook Art.
Yep. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. The premise of it is mental health awareness and suicidal prevention for creatives in particular. So how I arrived at formulating a foundation, it's a multi-path to get where I'm at. But one tragedy that happened in my life that really made me go this route is my niece. She committed suicide 2018, 2 days before me and my son's birthday. Me and my son shared the same birthday. And after she did that, I came across her sketchbook and on the front page of her sketchbook, she had an article of me that I got interviewed in my hometown here in Reading. And they did an article on me, art is my craft, and they were kind of highlighting all the things I've done. And that got to me, that really got to my heart, because I didn't know she was watching me, and I didn't know that she was aspiring to be an artist herself. Mm-hmm. So I was looking through her sketchbook, and she was drawing. I had no idea she was even into art. Mm. Here I was teaching at the Gogglers. I was doing all these things, and I had this niece so kind of close to me, and she was kind of watching me from afar. But you know, that kind of drove me into building this foundation and creating these safe spaces for young adults and even adults to provide, you know, that permission that everybody seeks. Mm-hmm. Because I even realized that when I was teaching in corporate, I mean, not teaching, but I was working, I was a designer for KBS Advertising Agency in New York City, International Advertising Agency. And, you know, I would have conversations with my coworkers, and they would always, you know, say, yeah, I used to be creative. I used to draw. And I shelved it once I, you know, got older and things of that nature. So it was always, and they always, like, they would do little things and ask for my permission, like, is this good? Or, you know, I'm like, it's great. And I'm glad you were able to do that. And you had the courage to even show me. Mm-hmm. But it's not really about permission, but that's where people are. They need that permission, you know, for some reason.
Yeah, and I feel unbelievably blessed that creativity has played such a part in my life, you know, because it was there from the beginning. Like, there was no choice for me. It was that art was going to be a part of my life. I just didn't know how. You know, that was what I knew. I mean, man, from as far back as I can remember, like, it was just there. And I think it's there in all children, really. I mean, and you know, if you ever have the opportunity to watch kids play or do art or color, I mean, that is it's so pure. and so wonderful to watch. And it just breaks my heart to think that, you know, they don't get to hang on to that because life comes in, yeah. You know, tragedy comes in and things and, you know, just it, and then that goes away. And it's about, oh man, reconnecting with that wonderment. If you can stay in touch with that wonderment, that's the key.
And just like you said earlier, that's our job. I feel like I'm obligated to make sure they stay in that place. Mm-hmm. And what's exciting about the future, in my opinion, and you know, my perspective, is we're seeing technology, AI, and all these things. It's really showing and proving, especially the redundancy and the mundane activities of so-called jobs and things of that nature. Our technology and our inventions are being able to take over those jobs and alleviate some of those mundane things that take away from the energy of creation.
Sure.
So I think within the near future, we're going to see a lot more appreciation of creativity, and things are going to shift towards appreciation of creativity.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about that. You mentioned AI. What are your thoughts? I mean, what are you thinking?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a tool like everything else, mm-hmm. but it's a super tool in my opinion. And I think it is perfect for the time because the realization of like, let's look at the digital landscape in general. You know, we're seeing a lot of things that are templated out and just mm-hmm. reproduced, mass produced. And we're realizing it's reflecting back on our behavior, the gluttony, the greedy, like, because it comes back to humanity. Because I look at creativity as a evidence of being human, you know?
I like that.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's like, if somebody would pose a question of what it's like to be human, that's creativity right there, you know?
Yeah.
And then the opposing view of that is all what's coming out, the AIs, the digital landscapes, mm-hmm. the automation and things of that nature, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Something that I started kind of realizing recently is I started kind of seeing creativity as an energy that's what is known as a source energy. It's connected to source. Right. There's moments where I would be trying to write copy and I would literally feel something come into me. Okay. And I don't question it because I'm like, okay, it's going to happen. And I would just try to ride it as long as I can. It's like a wave. You got to ride. You can't like, you know, that is not the moment now to like go do something else. It's like you know. You're asking for help. Something has descended, whether it's a muse, whatever you want to call it, and you just go. And I have written things, Theron, that when I was done, I was like, how did I write that? Because yes. It was like, it was at another level. And it's almost like you can't, I remember like not even being able to write it fast enough. It was pouring out of me. And then all of a sudden, it's gone.
Yeah.
Like, it's gone. And I could feel it go too. And I'm like, man, that is crazy. You know, yeah, I wish I could call upon that at will, but sometimes, yeah. You know what it is? You got to put yourself in that place. I almost feel like it's if you're really struggling for an idea and you're investing the time and the effort, that's when the help comes. You know, yeah. I don't know if that's ever happened to you. I assume that it has but that is incredible.
Yeah, I get when you were speaking, I got goosebumps because I call it the flow state.
Yeah, there you go.
People will not understand, but when it comes, just like you said, it comes mm-hmm. and you have to, I ride it out and I'm constantly, my whole goal is to be in flow state as long and as often as possible because I say I'm the vessel now.
Yes.
And, you know, that energy moves through me. And just like you were saying, it creates the most beautiful, unexplainable expressions.
It's magic.
And, Yeah, it is it's magic, period.
So I started to really think that, like, okay, there's definitely something going on here. This is a source energy. So again, just another thing that creativity is amazing for. And, you know, you said something earlier that I want to talk a little bit about, how art is everything. Art yeah. can be in everything. And you're right. It can. It doesn't matter if you're baking pies, if you're painting sidewalks or houses, there is a craft that can come into play if you allow it, if you want to be, you know, the best at that. You know, that's where, again, creativity says, okay, I'm here. I'll help you figure it out. Those people are out there, you know, you know, too, if you're in tune with kind of like your own creative kind of vibration, when you run into those people, you connect immediately. That is why I wanted to have you on the podcast, because when we first talked, I mean, I was 5 minutes into the conversation and I was like, oh, this guy's coming on my podcast for sure. And I think I even told you that afterwards. I said, I don't want to have you on my podcast, because it just was immediate. It was an immediate connection, right? Yeah, I just think that creativity again, showing up, doing its thing.
Yes, absolutely. And I appreciate you having me on. And to speak to your point, you know, there was a few times I got laid off. Mm-hmm. And every time I got laid off, I questioned my value, mm-hmm. right? And I look at creativity as value, because when we look at mass production and we're looking at templated approaches to a lot of solutions and things of that nature, you know, the contrary to that is originality, one of one. And when we look at diamonds and all the valuable things that we call valuable in this material world, mm-hmm. they're unique. You know,
sure.
they're you know, and that's what defines, you know, nature, creativity, and things along that line. So, you know, I totally agree with what you're saying there.
Let me ask you this: how do you stay inspired?
Yeah, great question. You know, I'm a student always, and I learn from everything, anybody, and everything. And I keep an open mind like that, because I read a lot. I got tons of books, but when I read a lot and I obtain a lot of information, but that only makes me realize how I don't know anything. And I like to stay right there, because that's where the curiosity is, and that's where I'm able to address things that I think I know to be true. Because if we understand life to be ever changing and evolving and growing, the things that we think are true are still growing and evolving and changing, even at the slightest degree. The slighter degree of perspective in art is a whole new world, you know?
Yeah.
And that's how I look at it. You know, even when you're mixing colors, the slight degree of, you know, red into, you know, the blue, yep. it changes, you know, the principles or the makeup of that color, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, who are some artists you look up to, or even people you look up to, mentors you've had, who you have any that come to mind?
Yeah, as far as artists, the masters, of course, you know, yeah. Peter, Paul Rubin, Rembrandt, Salvador Dali. Mm-hmm. From a business perspective, Andy Warhol. There's tons of them. I sure. respect them all, and I love art history. The mm-hmm. funny thing about art history, when I was in college, I took art history, and the teacher I had was amazing. She taught art history from the lens of how humanity viewed God, right?
Okay.
We look at medieval, we see the structures all kind of extruding out and up to the sky in tall, really sharp angles. all the way down to we got to modern, where even we look at the churches, they're not as like castles, and they're more modern and they're more eye level. Like, it was just an interesting perspective. I took all that information in, and I just saw the world in a whole new way. Mm. You know, from the paintings, architecture, sculptures, you know, you follow all that's documented, and you could see the transition all the way into this day on how, you know, how elaborate the details were and how simplified it gets throughout, you know, centuries.
Yeah, yeah. I love that. I look at it like teaching. Teaching is not like filling students' heads with facts. It's kind of like lighting a fire. It's giving them curiosity, right? It's giving them permission to go seek things out and teach them to be lifelong learners.
Yes.
Right? Like I'm a big believer on helping my, not so much teaching my students what to think, but teaching them how to think. Teaching them how to think, which it sounds like that's what that teacher did for you. And then you're off and running, right? Now you take that, and now you start looking at that art and art history through that lens, and it just opens up and it just keeps unfolding. And right? I mean, that to me, that's the profession of teaching right there. And not everybody's cut out for that. Not everybody's cut out, because you got to like take your ego way down. You got to not even way down. You got to get rid of it. Right? Your ego has no business in a classroom.
You got to be the clown. And you really got to be the clown in the sense of...
Yeah, play the fool.
Yeah, because I look at it, there's love and fear, right? And to have the love, you got to erase the fear, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it takes courage. So I say there's no path until you step forward. You create the path as you step forward, if that makes sense.
Yep.
Yes, there are options, and yes, there are paved paths, but that's someone else's story for you to learn, for you to be brave enough to step forward and create your own path. And that, I feel like that's what's the missing piece, because it's a lot of fear in the sense of somebody that has fear, they're going to go down a path that's paved for them, mm-hmm. and it's not meant for them, because it was meant for the one that paved the way.
Yeah.
And paving the way is to give back and build that love and that confidence up into the individual so they can make their own way, you know?
Mm-hmm. I love this quote. I don't know who said it, but it's this kind of analogy, if you will. It goes like this. It says, "Come to the edge," he said. "No, we are afraid." "Come to the edge," he said. "No, we are afraid." "Come to the edge," he said. They came. He pushed them, and they flew.
Yes.
Right? I mean, that's it right there. That's it.
Yeah. It's
getting them to come to that edge, you know, and that is not an easy process. It takes a lot of time. It takes multiple different approaches. You know, you can't just say that and have them, "Oh, okay, yeah, let's walk to the edge." And, you know, when I get into the classroom, I can start to feel, and as the year goes on and the projects, and they're starting to see the work on the wall, and they're seeing their confidence is getting built. Like, "Oh man, I am pretty good at this," you know? Yeah. And I tell my students, I said, listen, I know this is advertising design, but if you get to the end of this and you put everything into it that you could, put your heart into it, do everything that I kind of want to get you to do, and you get to the end and you realize, you know what, this isn't for me, that's a win. That's a win. Figure, because that's what you're here to do. You're here to figure that out. I'd rather you figure that out now than 5 years into a career with a mortgage and two kids, and now you hate your job.
Yeah.
You know, so... take that off the table right now. It's like you're not going to like hurt my feelings if you don't like this class at the end. This is for you to, right? I mean, that's kind of like how I roll with my class in terms of like what I do. And I just tell them, just give into the process. That's all. Mm-hmm. Just give into the process. And one day at a time, one step at a time. But man, when the art starts going up on the walls in like October, November, and I come in there in the morning sometimes, and I'm just like, oh my God, I just look at it. It's like, it's unbelievable, especially when you see it all together. Like there's something about seeing all the pieces together that makes it like that elevates it to another level. Right.
Yeah. Even to your point right there, that's what it's all about. All together, different variety. And our job is to, you know, we connect the dots, you know, we're dot connectors, you know, as individuals. I mean, you know, people regurgitate these statements and these phrases all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, we are one and things of that nature. But the reality is how we experience this experience, this human experience, we're individualized. And when our ego kicks in, it's about I. Mm-hmm. But our job is to connect. And through creativity, we connect, you know?
Yeah. I'm a big believer. I read that once from Steve Jobs. He talked in a speech he gave at Stanford, a graduation speech. He talked about the dots connecting in your life. You know, how your job isn't to figure out how they connect. Your job is to just keep doing your thing. Like he talked about how he dropped out of Reed College and he went into this, but he didn't leave campus. He sat in on a couple calligraphy classes. Yeah. And he was mesmerized, right? He just sat in on them. And that love of typography and calligraphy worked its way into the first Mac.
Yeah.
Simply because he sat in on that class and it gave him that appreciation and that love of flow and line and, you know, just a big dot connecting there, right?
Yeah.
How do you see your dots connecting? Have you ever looked back and saw like maybe a job that you took at the time and thought, I don't even know if this is going to be me. I don't know if I'm going to like this. But then you know, 15, 10, 20 years away from it, you're like, ooh, that did connect. It didn't see it at the time, but I see it now. You have any like that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my story says it all, you know, from basketball, the discipline, the determination I had in basketball translates right into an artist, you know, my artist, how my worth, my word, my work ethic into entrepreneurship, because it takes that thick skin. It takes that hard head, that determination, that perseverance, that mental fortitude to deal with the ebb and flow of, you know, because in entrepreneurship, you know, you don't necessarily know when, you don't have a predictable income per se.
Right.
You know, you're working towards that, but you have to have that drive to deal with the ebb and flow of your income and the fluctuation of how the pattern of your business works. And you got to be able to figure that out. And so basketball and how I was determined to be the best that I could be all the way to my upbringing. I look at how I was raised and how I was brought up in an environment that was contrary to how I was raised, you know, in the church, you know, good manners and behavior. But right when I stepped outside, I had to deal with peer pressure and, you know, my peers doing things that I was told not to do and, you know, all those things. And that translates into me as an artist, my character, how I don't follow, you know, I stay steady into my lane. And no matter what seems easy, I always know how to do it the right way and do it the correct way, whether there's introduction to shortcuts or the easy way and things that I know. So in retrospect, I look at all those different attributes of my experience and I can see, you, they say when you look back in hindsight, you're able to kind of connect the dots and see, you know, so yeah.
So how do you handle rejection?
Rejection, I love it.
Okay, talk to me about that.
Yeah, I get excited. I didn't always feel this way or be this way about rejection, but just like I said, I'm on my purpose, in my person, purpose, working on my purpose, working on myself. I know why I'm here, or at least I understand at this point in my life.
Sure.
It's not easy. It's in some days are not, you know, joyous, you know, it's not
no.
the best thing, mm-hmm. you know, but I love rejection because I get excited. I'm like, okay, that's perfectly fine. Now I get to find out what's going to work for me. And I keep, that's just an indicator on that's not the route for me at this time. You know, I've been, mm-hmm. I deal with it all the time. So I had to switch my mindset on what does this mean to me? You know, there was one point I was applying for any job, McDonald's, whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had degrees and everything, you know, mm-hmm. overqualified. And I was just, you know, there was times in my life where I was working three jobs.
Right.
Got getting laid off and just so much disappointment in my life that I developed this mindset. I get so excited about rejection.
You know what? I've never heard anyone answer it like that. I've asked that question a lot and I've never heard anyone answer that like that. That is really cool. The hidden power of rejection, right? If you know how to harness it. If you can harness it, yes. It sounds like you do. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. So you're a licensed therapist?
I'm not. So I have workshops where I partner and collaborate with licensed therapists. Mm-hmm. So right now, my foundation has a partnership with Betterview Counseling, mm-hmm. and it's a mental health community center that facilitates, you know, therapy practices yep. to alleviate anxiety mm-hmm. And depression, things that all those trauma and all that. So what I do is I introduce the art aspect of it
mm-hmm.
and the therapist introduce the therapeutic part of it. So the session usually goes like something like a meditative practice, a breath work.
Mm.
And then I introduce like the activity, the art,
yeah.
creative aspect of it.
Both go together so perfectly.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Right.
I love doing it because people look at art, you could look at it from a therapeutic standpoint. You could look at it from just more of a outlet because there's a therapeutic practice,
oh,
but then there's mm-hmm. an outlet where you got harness the focus and it could just be an outlet for a escapism per se.
Mm-hmm.
But there's different ways to look at art and I like to really carve out or introduce different aspects on how to think about the activity of art, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah. What's a piece of advice you received that stuck with you over the years? You have one?
That's a good one. I would say this because a lot of people that are close to me and get to know me, one of my nature is more of a so-called introvert. I like to say I'm an omnivert because mm-hmm. I can be both extrovert and introverted when need be because mm-hmm. And that's only because of my conviction I have of what I feel I have to do, my purpose and things of that nature.
Sure.
But a lot of people that get to know me personally and they get to be around me, they always tell me that, you know, I should talk more and be... just be more of myself. I'm kind of reserved mm-hmm. when I don't know a person, so they don't get the full me, if you would say, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people tell me, if people knew the mind of Darren, or you know,
sure.
or all that type of stuff.
Yeah,
I hear that a lot from the coach for me. So that really that warms my heart a little bit. I don't take it to the head, but it's something that a lot of people say.
Yeah. What about a piece of advice you give? What's something you give to people that you think is good advice?
Yeah. It's my business. Don't quit. So I have my for-profit is Don't Quit LLC. My foundation is TCA, Don't Quit Foundation. So I always lead with my advice or something I would say to somebody.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of people say I'm a man of few words. So I was like, okay, don't quit. That's my advice to everybody. And it's pretty broad. So I will distill it down. It's more, you know, don't quit your utmost desire. Something that, you know, you love to do. Don't quit that. Don't quit on yourself. You know, don't quit on who you are, you know, yourself in general.
I love that. What's the significance of the butterfly?
Yes, I'm glad you asked, because that's my brand icon. I lead with the butterfly. Universally is known for transformation process, perseverance, hope. So when I decided to go on my entrepreneurial journey for the second time,
mm-hmm.
I was hospitalized for 6 months straight in the hospital. Just, I had a lot, probably over 13 different surgeries.
Oh man.
Yeah. But my experience, I had time to really retrospect back into my life and look at how I was, you know, previously to me. So I had, during this day, I felt I had to surrender everything I thought to be true. Prior to that point, you know, I was insecure. I had a lot of butterflies in my stomach, per se. Mm. And, you know, it took a lot for me to speak to people and things of that nature. So, and I had stomach surgery. So these concepts were coming to me, and I needed something to represent, you know, what I was going through. And the first painting I painted when I got outside the hospital, now I'm still in a lot of pain too, getting out of my stomach, and I'm making sure I finish this one painting, and it was a butterfly, and it's actually on everything. This butterfly, I got different versions. I got at least 33 different concepts inside the butterfly, but the one painting that I finished after I got outside the hospital, I sold it to my collector. He lets me borrow it anytime. He's great. He loves all of my work, but I sold it to him, and then I created my brand out of that. So this is just the silhouette of the first butterfly painting I ever painted. After that, I painted at least probably like 50 different versions of that. I keep the same dimensions, which is 30 by 40, which equals to 7 if you're into numerology.
Mm-hmm. I was going to just ask about like the distinct kind of like abstract shape that it was in, but you already answered that question. So that's really cool. Sounds like that was some divine inspiration.
Yes, absolutely.
Kind of what we talked about earlier with source energy and things that kind of like when you get in that flow, or when you kind of can dial in that pipeline or that frequency.
Yes.
Man, I'll tell you, I wish everyone could get to experience that, because it's profound, and it's real. I mean, it's beautiful, you know? Wow. So what is the website of either your website or the organization? I guess are they both the same? Tell me what it is. What's the website?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find all the information about everything that I'm doing on my website, TheronCookArt.com. and there's tabs for the foundation. It has its own tab and all information there. All my workshops, classes, everything is on my website.
Nice. Okay. So where do you, what's next for you? Where are you going to be taking all this? Where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Yeah, absolutely. So right now I'm working on programming. I call it software and then the hardware, right? Mm-hmm. So all the programming workshops and classes that I'm designing right now, I'm, for the next 2 years, I'll be just introducing it to the community, test running them and making adjustments. But the bigger vision is to have a headquarters. So what I'm doing now is, so all the programs and workshops are under the umbrella of Don't Quit Omniversity. We could dive into that if you will, but it's that that's the umbrella of all the programs and software for the hardware is the actual headquarters mm-hmm. and the geographical location where we'll be facilitating all the programming inside the headquarters. And so that the bigger picture is to create experiences for the software, the education part of it.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. So I have a vision of where the headquarters would ideally be. But essentially with all this that I'm doing is creating or contributing to better behavior of humanity. We look at the wastefulness of our behavior when it comes to overconsumption of whether it's food, whether whatever it is.
Sure, sure.
You know,
yeah.
All those things leading to all our problems, like the landfills, not taking care of our environment. But to get to a point where we're conscious of our behavior and how it's affecting how we treat each other, how we treat the environment, our resources, and how we value what we have already. You know, I target the mental health with the art, the appreciation for creativity. And so a lot of my events are at the museum. So I like to really, change the perspective of how we look at the museum. You know, it's sure. Valuing artifacts, is documentation, is preserving the human history of how we evolved into where we are now. And I believe that we have to be appreciative and pay homage to the minds that evolved us into where we are now. It's all interconnected. So
mm-hmm.
But my main focus is really in the arts, in the vein of arts, trying to contribute to changing behavior through art and mental health.
That's a big job. That's a big challenge.
Yeah.
Wow. I love it though, because you're right. I mean, you know, everything is interconnected. It really is. And when you can start to have some self-awareness about that, I think it can change it changes your perspective on how you roll in the world, to your point, how you talk to people, how you connect with people, how you just everything. I'm telling, I mean, I know you know this already. Art is everything. It really is.
Yeah.
I just wish more people knew that, you know, and could connect with that and be comfortable with connecting with that part of their soul. Because, you know, if you started out as a kid and you made it into adulthood, I know there's a lot of stuff that could happen in between there on your journey, but that little kid is still in there. And that little kid wants to draw and play and paint and create, because I feel like we get that in our youth. It's coded into our DNA, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it's like life's way of saying, this is important, remember this. Because if you remember, if you can remember how you just, I mean, kids, they could just, they don't need, they just play. They don't judge. Just that alone right there, Theron, think about that. The non-judgmental aspect and bringing in play, right? To every aspect of human existence. We could do that. We're on to something.
Yes.
Don't judge. Don't be judging. And just be willing to play.
Yeah, that's it. That's what else? It. How did we get so, not to cut you off, but
how did we get
so far from that? I
struggle with that every day.
Yeah.
I think it's because there's not enough of us that remembered what it felt like to be that kid.
Yeah.
Playing in the dirt or rolling around in the grass.
Yeah.
Because life, bills, mortgages, responsibilities. We all have that. We all have it, but it's still, you have to kind of, once you get to a certain point, to try to like connect back with it is a big deal. You have to really want to do that. But I think acknowledging it is the first step to change.
Yes. Yes. And when we look at, I say art is everything and everything is art. Now money is a form of art and it's somebody's art. So it's the behavior, the ego that says my art has to control this amount of people and I have to get this. So, there's so many different layers to it.
Yeah.
And I definitely want, it has to be properly, discussed it in for it to be in the right context, I'll say.
Yeah.
But, just like you're saying, like, for instance, I got, I'm rolling out this program called Art Cycle. And it's to bring awareness to healthy recycling, looking at wasteful things that we look at as trash or recycling items that is, that can be recycled or upcycled into something new. And that's what life is.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing new under the sun. So I'm taking that concept and the recycling program, and how I'm starting it out is bringing awareness to what I'm doing and empowering young artists to help me beautify these things. But the bigger picture is, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Goggle Works here in Reading.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Largest art facility in our country, And so I'm going to be teaching, that's where I teach my painting classes, but I'm also going to be teaching upcycling, recycling there. So we're going to be doing cleanups at the park, organizing the recycled material, and we're going to be creating art out of them.
Yeah.
Doing installations to bring awareness to all these different recycling initiatives. Because now there's tech waste. You got recycled phones, wires, all types of stuff, plastic bottles,
we
go through that list, but all that could be recycled and be used as a resource. We could be resourceful with our waste and, all the tariff conversations and all the overseas exporting and manufacturing issues. But if we look at things that we already have differently, we won't have, we could solve some of these problems.
Now, can anybody take those classes?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And they just go, do they go through you or do they go through the museum?
The Goggle Works has a catalog that they publish, I believe, at least seasonal.
Okay.
They have like a catalog with all the different offerings that they have. And we're in there, like my painting classes in the fall catalog. So we advertise it that way. But also I do my own advertising and marketing just to make sure we're getting a word out there.
So people can follow you on Facebook or Instagram if they wanted to, and kind of like learn about all the stuff that you got going on and the foundation, right?
Yes.
TheronCook.com or no?
TheronCookArt.com.
TheronCookArt.com. Right.
Yes.
All right. Well, this has been awesome, man. There were so many times where I wanted to just like jump out of this chair and start screaming with some of the stuff you were saying. So I did good, right? I just kind of nodded my head, but I was going crazy inside because this was you get it, man. You get it. And you're on the front lines and it's a war.
Yes.
It's a war.
It is a war. That's for sure.
And I'm about to head into my classroom at the end of August again and start that process all over of getting these kids to believe in themselves and be willing to kind of take some risks and, you know, be courageous and be brave and all through the process of art. And when they come through at the end of the year, when they get to May, they're changed. They're different. And you can't just tell them that that's going to happen. They're like, yeah, right. Okay.
Right.
It's every day incrementally, like, you know, and just hitting them in different approaches and, you know, and it's messy. It's a messy process. Creativity and changing lives is a messy process, but it's necessary. And yeah. I'm glad you're out there doing your thing.
Yes. And I commend you for doing what you do. And I still got to get your book. And I also, I would love to get you involved in some of our art emotion workshops.
Okay.
I would love to talk.
Give me your address. I'll send you a copy of the book. You've earned it.
Oh, I appreciate. Oh man.
I'll send it to you.
The crazy story I got to tell you really quick is I actually went to my local Barnes and Noble. Mm-hmm. I had them looking for your book.
Yep. It's on there.
Yes. They said I had to order it. I'm like, oh, I want to just purchase it right now.
I'm surprised you didn't say the movie Child's Play came up with Chucky. That's usually what happened. Remember that movie with the doll? Child's Play. They kind of like, that's their made up name. That Child's is my name. So I feel like but they got better. They got better branding and social media keyword searching. But I appreciate that. No, I will send you a copy. But thank you for doing this. I really appreciate it. You're the real deal, man. You were the real deal.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you, man. Thank you.
Take care and be well, okay?
Yes, absolutely.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, Ad Yakkers. Hope you enjoyed it. Because we have many more great conversations planned and guests lined up ready to yak it up. Ad Yak is sponsored and produced by ASR Media. Theme song was written and performed by Dan Ross. Ad Yak is the official podcast of the AAF Greater Lehigh Valley Ad Club. Stay hungry, stay humble. Till next time.
This episode of Ad Yak is rated O for, oh man, that was good.